Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade in one for cash. Give a new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode 252, recorded on Tuesday, February 9th, 2016. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason L.
I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion.
Sorry, we didn't do the
We're
in a Ron sandwich right now.
We are, in fact, in a Ron sandwich. Maybe sounds a little weird when I say it. But we do have, as our special guest today, Ron Amadio joining us from Ars Technica. How's it going, Ron?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Excellent. Good to have you along on this light news week.
So, Ron, if you were a piece of bread, what kind of bread would you be? Either Ron.
I'll defer to our guest.
White bread? I don't know. I like
like Wonder Bread?
Yeah, Wonder Bread.
I'm gonna go with a nice piece of Italian bread. You know, it's fresh Italian bread
so with the light crust that's made of cheese.
Maybe a little Parmesan.
Then I want to be prosciutto. What do you want to be?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm walking into here.
This is getting weird.
Yeah, really hungry.
Apparently, Florence is hungry. Good to have you along, Ron Amadio, especially because we have a few of your stories in the rundown.
Yes,
so
we do.
You can give us your expert opinion on those.
This week is all about Amadio.
I know. Sure. Apparently so. We're going to be discussing Google's next big push into VR, Andy Rubin's next big push into AI, podcast's next big push into the Play Store, and Apple's next, guess it, big push into Android.
You know, yes. It'd be great if we had push pops to eat while you were doing that.
because as we know, you're very hungry, so...
Anyway, if you hear a stomach rumbling.
All right. Hey, why don't we talk about something that doesn't induce hunger?
I agree.
Let's do it.
If you were wondering what kind of bread Android would be, it would be moldy bread because it's green. Now it's time for Android news.
That was really good.
I like the color aspect. I object to the moldy.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah. I'm really enjoying
depends,
these.
Depends who you buy your phone from, if it's moldy or not.
Yeah, that's true. Why couldn't we be Irish soda bread that is dyed green?
I did not think of that.
There you go. Such a bread connoisseur.
I'm just saying, I don't want to be moldy. Anyway, because the news is not moldy.
No, it is not.
And to talk about the news, good thing we have Ron Amadio here because we've been talking a lot about Google and its intent to kind of double down on virtual reality. And the Financial Times has a report that seems to further illustrate that, that Google is in fact going to move forward on virtual reality in a big, big way. Ron, you wrote about this on Ars Technica. What's the story here?
Basically, Google's going to build a version of the Samsung Gear VR kind of. That's pretty much the easiest way to say it. Like, imagine cardboard but plastic, and with a head strap and good instead of the cheap little $10 cardboard thing that they have right now. Cardboard has always kind of been the tip of the iceberg for Google, and this plastic version is going to be the next step. I guess they called it the successor to cardboard, where we're going to see. Finally, a decent headset that you can wear for a good amount of time, and it's going to have better lenses and sensors in it to kind of track your head better than just the regular cell phone can. And it's going to support more phones than just the Samsung devices that fit in a Gear VR, which is going to be kind of tricky because how can you make a headset where every Android phone in the world snaps into it in like a nice way?
Yeah, like I think of some of those car dash mounts for phones where they like they kind of retract and then you put the phone
they do
in
that
and it goes
for tripods as well. Yeah. There actually is a VR headset that I used at CES that allows pretty much any phone that can just fit into the little
clip.
Did
it do it elegantly?
Yeah, well,
it did it elegantly, yeah. But the thing is, it doesn't have the extra stuff that Ron was talking about, which is
kind of the
added, you know, sensors. And did you mention, did you mention anything about audio? I'm wondering if there was any mention.
No, they didn't say anything about headphones or any of that.
I think it would be cool to have
a company for VR audio.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking it'd be cool to have like little speakers embedded in there to have like some extra little.
There's a concern about that, about being totally immersed, and you still need to be somewhat connected to the outside world. And you know, and it's funny because I you don't want to be that guy. So I got my niece the ViewMaster VR one, and she has an old Moto G, and turns out actually it doesn't work with her phone, but her phone did fit in. It was more of a software issue. So we need to get her a new phone, and then she'll be able to use it. But I was surprised that when you opened up the ViewMaster, there was like that little springy kind of thing where you could adjust the size, and it said it could. It fit her tiny little phone, and it fit all the way up to a Nexus 6, 6P, like the big old phone. Mm-hmm. So they can do that. But I will say that holding the goggles to your head after a while gets so tiring.
Yeah, your arm gets tired.
Exactly. So the strap is a big kind of thing. My question, and Ron, I don't know if you touched on this or if you talked to anybody who knows this. Cardboard launched, what, like 2 years ago, right, at I.O.? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hasn't it been 2 years?
Yeah, it's been 2 years.
Yeah. It's been a while.
I feel like this is, like, why did it take so long for this? Like, I feel like Cardboard was already a success 6 months after it came out.
Oh, I think Cardboard started on day one of Google's VR thing. Like, we can make this. And then developers started making software for it. And I think Google started making software for it at the same time. And part of this report says that they're going to have some kind of software package that goes with this. And I think that's what the delay has been for, really, that they really have nothing to do with this, with a VR device like this yet. It says it's going to build VR software directly into the operating system rather than relying on only a traditional app, which we've kind of heard about from the Wall Street Journal, where they said that the Android team was going to make some kind of VR operating system so that you don't have to jump in and out like you do today or jump into some weird little secondary display, which would be kind of interesting because, I mean, software has always been Google's strength kind of, and they're going to have this headset with some kind of crazy software in it. I think the software will be what's important, really, but we know nothing about that, so.
Ron, last year at Google I.O., when I was – Ron's, actually, maybe I should say. last year at Google I.O., when I was frantically late to the keynote.
Were you running, really?
Dashing through. Yeah, I got hung up on traffic. I only really missed like 10 minutes. But, you know, you can live stream it, so it's not like I missed anything.
Yeah.
As I was running up to the room where it was being held, I passed by the Cardboard booth, and I saw – and I swear I saw this – a bunch of hardware VR viewers. And my thought then was, this is the year that Google's taking Cardboard, which was the start of their VR efforts, and really kind of going full, you know, 100% on it. And all right, let's be serious. Here's your actual viewer, you know, that you can take seriously and all that kind of stuff. So I like you were saying, Ron, like I expected this last year.
Yeah.
And I swore it was going to happen when I saw that. But it totally didn't. And it's still kind of the Cardboard.
But they didn't
thing
do nothing
see.
Last year. I mean, they announced a lot more education initiatives, which.
Yeah, and Jump VR.
Which I think is actually pretty great that they did that. It's a good implementation for Cardboard.
And the GoPro support and crazy stuff. Yeah. So, and they announced the YouTube support. Like, I feel like they've been slowly putting these pieces in place. And
I
maybe
agree.
Now it's leading all to this to do like an official Google VR launch.
Yeah, Google's fine doing like a slow burn like that. They don't mind, you know, slowly building up to something useful.
Yeah.
But we've seen them build the team for this, like publicly.
We've been watching it for years now.
And yeah, they have, I've said this a couple times, but they have like crazy heavy hitters leave their position inside Google to go join the Google VR team. There's been John Wiley, head of Google Search, like a product that reaches millions and millions of people every day. And he left that to go work on the VR team. And Alex Faborg, the former lead designer for Firefox, another guy who's used to just this crazy scale, left to go work on the VR team. And they have an official virtual reality division now. And they're building something. And all we see on the outside is cardboard. But there's going to be way more to all this eventually.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you think of VR at the platform level, not just, oh, yeah, and your phone can view VR. But, I mean, I can almost envision, like, if they actually are building VR into Android, the platform, it kind of being the thing where, you know, kind of like connecting to Bluetooth to your car and that launches a certain set of actions. You drop this into a viewer, and now your Android experience is kind of in this
virtual
world.
If Project Tango is basically going to be the delivery system for that, because I don't think this is what you're talking about is not something I think everybody wants implemented into their phone. And I could see this being like a special case where you can get like this very powerful phone. Go ahead, Ron.
It could be a package that just goes into the phone if you're going to do VR. It becomes an option. But I think baking it into the OS makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
And makes adoption a lot easier. And honestly, I think that with Oculus's announcement of finally shipping, you know, that they made at CES, I think and with this report, and I imagine, you know, the timelines are similar for a reason, we're gearing up, you know, for similar to how we've seen iOS versus Android, we're going to see basically Oculus versus whatever Google VR is. I think that's what we're, you know, getting ready for.
And Zuckerberg has already talked plenty of times about how he envisions Facebook to actually work inside of
it's
VR.
It's not just games.
You know, it's not just games. They're thinking of it as a platform.
Yeah, can you imagine just like that's the way we're going to have to use interfaces someday?
That's the way that we could. That's what I wonder. If it's an option, you know what I mean?
They're really trying to go after that.
But that's the dream, though. I mean, like, I was just on my other podcast on iFanboy. We were talking about Neal Stephenson novels, and we were talking about...
We're talking
about Snow Crash, and like that's what we want.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
do we
future.
Want that? I don't think we want.
Yeah, we want exactly. Yeah. What
I
you're
hate
doing.
This picture. Swipe.
I know. You know.
Tinder in the air. Nope.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that worries me about this, about the whole Gear VR idea, where you slot your phone into a headset, is that your phone is not necessarily a great VR content pusher. Like, your phone is not a gaming console, and that's basically what you need for a virtual reality thing. Like, you're doing hardcore 3D processing all the time, and you're constantly measuring where your head is. There's been reports that have talked about Google going to chip vendors and saying, here is our custom chip design for virtual reality and augmented reality devices. And that'll have a focus on like 3D processing and all of that spatial stuff that you have to do, where on a smartphone, when you're mostly running Gmail and a web browser, you have this kind of power focus for 2D applications and good battery life with a GPU that's good enough, but not like this huge thing where you want to game on it all the time. And I don't know if your phone would be a good VR device. I don't know if a phone built for VR would be a good phone. And I mean, when you try a Samsung Galaxy whatever in a Gear VR, after a few minutes, it will sometimes say, the phone is too hot.
Yes.
You need to stop now.
But I feel like they want to move us away from having just the phone be like a separate entity from a computer. I feel like the way, you know, just using Microsoft's Continuum as an idea, like I could see that being the future, where you just have all of the software contained within this little device that you carry with you, and you could just plug it in. It does all this stuff, including VR. That's part of a different conversation, mostly. Yeah. But
I think the problem is the people in charge of chip design right now are mostly Qualcomm, and they design for marketing more than actual hardcore power. Where they're like, oh well, we need a lot of cores because saying we have an 8-core processor looks really great on the marketing sheet.
Octa-core. Versus,
I mean, it does look good in headlines.
And if you look at the design, of, oh my gosh, the iPhone, it has a dual-core processor, and they get by just fine I'm sure it's not as marketable someone who's selling chips to everybody. But all of these processors are made to get like high benchmark scores too. Like they're very bursty. They want to turn on, do a whole lot of power really quickly, and then turn off. Like load
settle.
Your app,
yeah.
load the web, and then go to sleep. Where VR, you need like this big, long, sustained, mm-hmm. constant.
It's like running a marathon.
Yeah, and it's a totally different chip design. It's a different power envelope. You're going to have different balance between CPU, GPU. I don't know if the cell phone thing is a great idea.
Well, I mean, the other side of this equation is that the Oculus, now mind you, the Oculus is definitely on the higher end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about with Google is probably the lower end of the spectrum. But the Oculus Ready PCs were announced by Oculus, and they're coming in starting around $1,500. Now, that's a bundled price with the Oculus.
That kind of
shows you the economics of what it takes.
That's about as much for a gaming, like relatively moderate gaming PC.
Yeah, and then $1,500, that would include the Oculus. But, you know, $1,500, that's no shake for a device that can handle kind of the high-intensity stuff that
goes
on
with
VR
versus
your phone.
I just think down the line, you know, years from now, like this is eventually. But
the long-term thing.
But other Ron brings up a good point that, like, I wonder, what is Qualcomm doing in the VR space? Do we know?
They've done some tech demos, but no products. And I think that's part of what this is. When you're a trailblazer, like Google would be for this VR thing, and the market does not exist yet, for the first couple cycles, maybe you need to make your own stuff.
Yeah.
And then later, maybe then you can bring the third parties with you later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Oculus specs are really good because you can see the balance of power between like the GPU and CPU, and in those Oculus specs they have like killer video cards. Like they're spending something like $500 on a video card and a lot less on a processor, and you don't have that kind of power balance on a phone today. It's going to be mostly CPU because that's what you use most of the time, because mm-hmm. everything's too
Well, let's transition into something a little bit different here. Andy Rubin, creator of Android, immortal in the eyes of Android fans the world over. It's about to... Hi, Andy. Hi.
Welcome back, Andy.
It's good to have you here. We want to know what you're doing in the world of AI. Andy, I heard that you left Google... Well, I knew that you left Google in 2014, but I heard that you are working on releasing a free dash cam in exchange for data, essentially. Ooh. Putting dash cams... And this is just one of the many... kind of projects that Andy and Playground, I believe it's called Playground.
Playground Global.
Yeah,
Playground Global. His outfit are behind. A lot of people are just kind of saying, Andy Rubin, you know, you might not see it now, but essentially he's at the forefront of what AI is going to be doing over the course of the next however many years. And being that he created Android, something we talk all the time about, it's interesting to kind of wonder if he's on the forefront of something else that we're going to be talking about.
I feel like it's very related to what we were just talking about.
Yeah, it totally
in regards
is.
To the VR.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Two things real quickly.
Yes.
One is, Brian, can you go back to that article about Andy Rubin with the recent photo? He's if you compare the recent photo in the article, look at that. Like, he's getting stylish compared to that old Google headshot.
Yeah, I was actually noticing that too. I mean, Wired is also
sure. Yeah, very, but he's got a little bit
it's
of
a very
scruff.
Nice jacket.
He's got a little jacket.
He's wearing a jacket that's in vogue of color right now, which is that blue.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like we're seeing a very more stylish Andy Rubin here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right.
Glasses are kind of the same.
Yeah, yeah, but. So that's number one.
You totally are.
And number two, I may have, I've been going down to Palo Alto for a lot of meeting stuff, and I may have been to Playground Global's office, and in their lobby there's a big robot and things like that. Oh. So I wouldn't be surprised at all. Yeah. So
you didn't sneak a pic?
I couldn't.
Pics or didn't happen.
But no, I know nothing about what they're working on. It's not like there's anything like that. But
sure.
given what it seems and what we've read, I mean, he seems like a guy who innovates and is looking for an area to innovate. And AI is the next step, you know.
Yeah, and he's bored when he's not innovating, which is why he was over at Google.
I'm ready for some innovation. I'm ready for somebody to be like, I'm bored. It's time for something new. Let's.
How do we feel?
Though, it's,
Oh, sorry.
It's a shame he left Google, since they're all about AI stuff now. You know, they're doing they taught an AI to play Go, that old kind of checkers looking game, however many weeks ago, and they're going to have the live YouTube broadcast of like Go versus the world champion.
I don't even know how to play that.
And they're doing all this AI stuff, and you need like crazy cloud computers to do any of this, you know, neural network tree processing nonsense. And he's got whatever he can whip together. Amazon cloud services, I guess, or whatever you're going to license.
Your neural network in the Amazon cloud?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's
what you have to do. You can't have that many computers on your own.
I mean, he's just on another level. Like, he got bored of Google. They moved him into robotics, and he was there for a year, and he was bored in robotics. He was bored in robotics. It was his job to play with robots, and he was bored.
He got like 9 awesome industry-leading robot companies together, and then just like left. And I don't know. I was hoping he would make, you know, some kind of cool little Rosie the Robot assistant or something. And he just got these team together and left. And you read reports about it, and it's like, oh, the teams are in disarray and have no direction. And it's all these various companies spread all across the world. And now Google can't find anybody to lead the division. Like, it's a huge mess. Mm-hmm. And as good of a job as he did with Android, it's not. He's not perfect, at least, because the robot thing did not work out, and now somebody's got to clean all that up.
That's true.
I mean,
that's
to be
true.
Fair, yeah, I like Android a lot more now than
when he was. Well, that's not a bad point, right? It's certainly come a long way.
I'm definitely a big fan of the Sundar administration. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens with the Hiroshi administration.
I know that you're bullish on Hiroshi. That's. I mean, we've learned this in past episodes, so I think Hiroshi's going to do a fine job.
He's very nice.
You can go ahead and tweet me, Hiroshi, if you heard this.
Hiroshi's doing great. I think just touching on what Andy Rubin might be doing, if you look at the Playground Global website, and Brian, I put the link in the chat, to look at the companies that they're investing in, you know, there's a lot of, you know, stealth robotics company and AR, and, you know, like I think looking in at the companies that they're investing in, or, you know, clearly there's a value, you know, and there's got to be a mission for what they're doing at Playground. And so I think that's something interesting to look at as well.
Yeah, and there have been reports. I think maybe it was the Wall Street Journal had a report, or maybe it was the information. Anyways, about Andy Rubin kind of getting back into Android hardware in some way or fashion through Playground. So who knows?
Yeah,
maybe that'll
interesting. Yeah. The dash cam, that dash cam thing is super creepy. Like, you could never do that at Google, where it's like, you get a free dash cam in exchange for giving us the video feed, and we're going to have live video that works all across the world like that.
Yeah, I wonder,
people would be, they'd be on fire.
Is it live? That's what I couldn't tell. Is it really like live video feed of everyone, or is it just live data? So instead of going to Google Maps and seeing static data from whenever they last pulled it, you're seeing data that's kind of live and updated thanks to the fleet of people that are operating these dash cams.
I mean, you get that from cell phones now. I mean, what other data would you get from a dash cam other than the video feed? I kind of feel like a dash cam should just be my phone on a little sticky mount with maybe a power cable.
Yeah.
I don't really need
We feel that phones. Way. But, you know, there are also a lot of people that just want a standalone, like, navigation unit, you know, they'll want to use their phone. My mom, prime example. and I'm not, I mean, it's true. They have one. That's what she has an iPhone, but she doesn't want to use navigation on it. She wants to use it on the actual unit. Hey, let's take a break before we get into what is not a hardware section, because there really was no hardware news. We've got a bunch of email in today's episode, so we're going to get to that in a second. Well, actually, no, let's do that right now. Sorry, I skipped over it. You go.
Email
Awkward.
Time. We've got an email.
Autopilot.
I forgot. I thought I moved them all into the email block, but apparently I didn't.
I'm sorry. I just let you roll with that.
Okay.
In today's email, Ed from Atlanta, Georgia, which is also where the zombie apocalypse will start, according to The Walking Dead, wrote us an email. AAA team. That's us. Why can't Google get search right in Play Store? This is an old issue, but one that never seems to be improving. I went to check out Quester from episode 251, since I love gamifying anything. Searching for the app by name, it doesn't appear in the top results. In fact, the app doesn't show up until 21st on the list. I know there's lots of Google magic, popularity and probably advertising at work here, but will I ever be able to simply type in an app name and get that app as the top search result? This example almost seems as though Google is harming smaller app developers in favor of more established brands. Thank you, Ed. And I do agree that search in the Google Play Store is quite maddening. There's lots of issues I have with Google Play Store just in general, but this is definitely one of the things that's sort of bothersome.
So, like, I have two thoughts in reaction to this email.
Yeah,
I think we're all in agreement with Ed that the search is a challenge in the Google Play Store. I don't agree with the speculation at the end that they're doing it to harm smaller developers in favor of bigger developers.
I agree that
just isn't how business works. I mean, I think you want a good mix of everybody, mm-hmm. and I doubt that. But I also find it incredibly ironic that Google has a search product that we all don't like that doesn't work very well.
That is really true.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think about that.
Go to google.com and you do site:play.google.com, and then you can search the Play Store through Google and you will have an actual good search.
Honestly, I now just use the Google Now search bar and just tap on the apps tab, and that's how I look for apps now. And usually that's like been working well, but I don't like going straight into the Play Store. I can never find exactly what I want.
It's ridiculous.
I just tried what Ron suggested, and I type site:play.google.com Quester, and the first result is Quester.
Right up at the top.
It's super good. And man, the thing is people think about Google like it's this one company that works together on things, which sounds like a great, you know, utopian idea, but that's not how it works. Google is a bunch of little siloed divisions that tend to not talk to each other. So when people say, oh, the Google is so great at search, why is search in the Android? No, it's the Google search team is great at search. The Android team isn't super great at search and doesn't talk to the Google search team to get their you know, search technology in the Play Store.
They don't even have time to get lunch.
And that's just how Google has worked forever. And I mean, my favorite example of this is the one product that Google actually shipped across divisions was Google Plus. And in order to make that happen, in order to say work together as a company to launch this product, Larry Page had to bribe or threaten, depending on how you look at it, every employee by saying, your bonus this year is dependent on how well we do in social.
That's right.
So you need to make this Google Plus thing work. Like, he needed to threaten everyone just to say, work together as a company and have this launch happen. And that's just Google.
And that was around Google Plus, which, I mean, was something that they were obviously very, very, had gathered around pretty strongly to make it work. I just feel like search is Google's, it's what
bread
everybody knows. Yeah. I mean,
jam.
I mean, yes, it should. Their search should be pretty consistent. I feel like, but I completely understand why it's not.
And the Play Store just needs to be overhauled.
It's just a bummer that it's that way.
Yeah.
Again, it always needs to be overhauled.
Everything just
like
just
they overhaul it. And it's like, yay, it looks so great.
Just
except this one thing.
No, that's what it is all the time. Yeah. All the time.
Yeah, and then it kind of snowballs. So there you go. There's your tip of the week. Go to google.com, site:play.google.com, and then the app you're looking for. It's too bad we have to do that.
That's how I look for everything.
Make shortcuts for this in the Chrome search bar.
I don't even that's how I search for everything.
There's got to be an app that does that for you.
Google search?
No, Google App Store search the app.
You go to
and all it does is append that site:blah blah blah. And you just put in the search.
Like a little tasker
and it gives you, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. There we go. Okay, now I can do the thing that I awkwardly tried to do earlier. Let's thank the sponsor of today's episode. That is Gazelle. They are the trusted online marketplace for buying and selling used electronics. Look, Mobile World Congress is coming up. You got that phone, and you're just like, I've been living with this phone for so long. I need a new phone. Mobile World Congress, I'm pretty convinced I'm going to see the phone of my dreams there. So that's when you go to Gazelle. You can trade in your old device for cash. You can also actually buy certified pre-owned devices there. Or heck, you can do both. Whatever floats your boat. For trade-ins, simply visit gazelle.com, find your device, and you'll get an instant quote. Shipping is free. Payment is fast. They take care of all that stuff. If you happen to be looking for to buy a certified pre-owned device, Gazelle has a variety of Samsung Galaxy phones at great prices that you can choose from. Every device is fully inspected. It's backed by a 30-day return policy, so you can check it out and return it within 30 days. And sold without a carrier contract. Go to gazelle.com. You can see what your old device is worth. You can check out the selections of certified pre-owned devices today. Gazelle is now providing financing on all devices by Affirm. You simply provide your basic information. You'll get instantly approved, and you can pay as well as a pay offer in 3, 6, or 12 months. Easy monthly payments can be made through bank transfer, check, or debit card. So they give you some options there. You just select financing with Affirm at checkout, and you can kind of take a look at your options there. Gazelle also offers a 12-month warranty for cell phones powered by Assurance Solutions that cover water damage, cracked screens, I wish I had that, hardware defects, and more. And help is always available 24/7 to process claims and return your device ASAP. Don't miss out on getting the best value on certified pre-owned devices. Visit gazelle.com today. These are, you know, devices that are in excellent condition, put through a rigorous 30-point inspection process just to make sure that everything's in working order, and support by all the major carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint here in the U.S. Give new life to used electronics. Trade in for cash or buy certified pre-owned. Just visit gazelle.com today and take a look for yourself. And we thank Gazelle for their support. All right, before we get into the emails, we have one piece of this kind of hardware.
Hardware.
No, not. Oh, okay, yes, that one.
Hardware. I feel like we always need to say that. Like, exactly. Anyway, so a little update on Android Wear. In fact, yet another article from our good friend Ron over at Ars Technica talks about how Android Wear is getting its marshmallow rollout, and it's going to add support for LTE and speaker support. Ron, how big of an update is this?
Not huge. I mean, it mostly has to do with new hardware additions, which aren't on most watches. The Huawei watch has a speaker. And something else, the Asus ZenWatch 2 49mm, that. Yep. They've had speakers in there that have been dormant, and now you'll be able to hear alarms and make phone calls and things like that right from your watch, like Dick's.
You know what's going to happen, right? There's just going to be dudes walking up and down like Bart, just listening to
to music.
Turn it off!
Oh, sorry. I actually have a watch on. I could test out and see what it'd be like. Yeah, no.
Never ride Bart for the people doing that.
Oh. It brings marshmallow to Android Wear, but it's the way Android Wear works and Android TV and a couple other things now is the interface is kind of separate from the operating system, so they're going to upgrade the lower underneath part, but your interface is still going to be pretty much exactly the same. This actually came out in November for like 6 days on the on what has got to be the worst product launch ever. I'm talking like New Coke. Bad. The LG Watch Urbane second edition LTE, which came out, existed on the market for about 6 days, and then LG said, oh my gosh, the screen, there's something horribly wrong with the screen, we've got to cancel this, take them all back, we're not going to sell it anymore, it's dead, it's canceled, after 6 days on the market. And that was the launch device for Marshmallow, and had a speaker and LTE integrated into it, so you kind of didn't need a phone. And now it's dead now, but the software is back. So
I don't really want any of that stuff though. I don't want a speaker and I don't want LTE on my watch. I just want a nice watch to wear that works with my phone. I don't really understand what manufacturers are doing. Just
wrist actions,
just stuffing all these features. I mean, good for Google for picking that out and putting in Android Wear, but I just think it's completely useless.
Do you ever use wrist actions?
No. I hate wrist actions. Because I'm constantly moving and doing stuff. And like if I'm washing dishes, I don't want like my, you know, watch to just...
Well, they added more.
Are there new ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. Their blog post is weird sometimes.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff they listed was old, and I'm like, well, there were kind of risk features before, and
we just need to figure out an actual trajectory for, I need to know what the point is of Android Wear, because nobody has convinced me yet, other than it's a reason to spend, $150 to $350 on an accessory that buzzes me when my phone is buzzing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, what do you want to watch to do? And people are like, I don't know.
Tell me the weather, but it does that though.
Like, if what you want is for it to tell the time and to tell the weather and maybe give, let you read your text message. Like, it does all that. So what more do you want? Like, it's funny because, like,
So don't put speakers in it. I don't need that in there. I don't need it to be like, hey, mom, let's have a fight in the park in front of everybody. No, that stuff is private. It's supposed to take place in my car.
Yep.
Or let me tell you that I love you in front of everybody and happy birthday. Yeah.
Well, now I will say that the use case of driving and being able to respond just with voice or whatever is convenient. I mean, I could see that. I don't think the speakers and I don't think all this sort of stuff has, the use case of riding the subway or riding BART or whatever and hearing the music or whatever. But I feel like there are specific spots, and I've been hard on Android Wear as well too, because I think it's a solution without a killer app problem, but that said, like, I don't know what the killer app solution is or what.
Yeah.
I think it's just a second screen that lets you do some stuff.
Exactly.
And they're gonna make it do as much stuff as they can, and that's what we have to accept.
And the usage case you mentioned is like super niche. Like,
no, I don't know.
But I mean, I'm thinking about people who are buying new cars. They already have like Android Auto in their car.
Yeah, but you're talking. You've got millions of people who have cars who are not buying cars. You know what I mean? Like, honestly,
right? Exactly.
If I was going to buy a car tomorrow, the chances of it having Android Auto are probably slim. I mean, I would want it, but whether I could afford it,
or
whether
it's true.
A car that I would need, I don't think Android Auto has penetrated to the point where the need of a hands-free solution for drivers is gone. You know, so I think that's still a problem, and it will be for a couple of years. So.
And actually, it's a good point. I think it's going to end up benefiting the rental companies, like car companies, more than. Like CarPlay and Android Auto instead. Because then you can just hop in a car and just like plug in your phone and it works.
You don't even have to think
about
it.
All your stuff. Yeah. I think that's...
Agreed.
Yep. So thanks to the cancellation of the LG thing, we have this LTE support now, but no hardware with actual LTE support. I'd love to know what the battery life is like on a phone with a little LTE fireball just blazing away.
It's really funny. You guys are like, let's put all this stuff in a watch, and like, but you realize these watches are getting bigger.
And it's
totally annoying because I don't want to wear the watch that, I mean, granted, the watch that you're talking about was taken off the shelves, but I don't want to wear that watch. It's too big. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think when it gets small enough that you kind of get it for free in a watch that looks good, I think then it's worth a little more rather than it be a big bulky brick on your hand. But the LTE support is crazy the way it works. It still needs a phone to work, but you can leave your phone at home and your phone has to be connected to the internet and have the Android Wear app installed.
It's like a kangaroo, like little kangaroo sits in the pouch. It's like,
and then your watch off in LTE land will go up to the internet and then back down the internet to your phone and will sync to your phone that way over the internet. So it basically uses LTE, the internet, instead of Bluetooth.
Right, which is the same way that it syncs notifications down and has been doing that for a while as well.
Same way it works on Wi-Fi.
I didn't know that.
And how often do you leave your house without your phone?
Yeah,
right. I mean, like, I'm going to wear my watch, but I'm not going to take my phone. So, I'm, like, that just seems odd.
Actually, I mean, I go to yoga without my phone because no distractions. So, but
then you also wouldn't wear your watch.
That's true.
Yeah.
It would be cool for jogging, but it's an insanely expensive jogging device.
That's true.
Hey, we've got
a ton of email.
So let's
a long one.
Yeah, this one's a little long. I was trying to look at it like on how to cut it down, but there was, it paints a picture. So I'll just rattle through it here real quick.
Right.
Felix says, longtime subscriber, blah, blah, blah. Today, my LG G4 died as it is in an endless boot loop acknowledged by LG itself. Had the device for only 8 months. Realized two things. One, Every single one of my Android devices has had issues in the past month. Two NVIDIA Shield TVs started rebooting randomly. 2 weeks ago, one of my Shield TV remotes began malfunctioning. Also, the Shield TV began playing multiple audio sources whenever I woke up. Then today, my G4 went into an endless boot loop. Two, none of my Android phones have lasted more than 14 months. Motorola Droid 2, Samsung, on Verizon, Galaxy Nexus, Nexus 5, LG G4. The longest lasting was the Nexus 5 at 14 months, which was killed by the Lollipop update. You're not alone. Lollipop update seemed to kill a lot of people's phones. On top of that, my first NVIDIA Shield TV was dead on arrival when I first ordered it and had to be exchanged.
Dude, Mercury is always in retrograde for this person.
This guy is the tech equivalent of walking through a yard filled with rakes. Like every time he turns around, he's getting hit in the face with a device. It's like, I feel so bad.
That's the perfect way to put it, Ron.
Oh my God, that imagery, Ron. Why?
That's pretty perfect. Man. He says, I've come to the conclusion that Android hardware reliability is just not acceptable.
No.
As you would if this had all happened to you. Phones should last more than 14 months. Four of my five Android phones died within 1 year. TV boxes need to be bulletproof like my Roku 3 is. My love of the OS has blinded me for the past 4 or 5 years. I'll be switching out all of my Android hardware by the end of 2016. Listen, this is good. The hardest part will be no longer listening to All About Android. I've been listening to Jason since CNET and Ron got me and my wife back into comics with iFanboy, to which I just have to say a little side tangent. You can still listen. Like, don't only allow people that own Android devices. But anyway.
Well, he didn't mention me, and I'm new here, so.
Well, that is a ding.
So I feel really bad for this guy because so there's something that I like to call the tech distortion field that some friends have, where the kind of friends who always call you and be like, yeah, my printer doesn't work. I don't know. It just stopped working. And like, things just don't stop working. I feel like he might have some sort of aura that is making technology. Because honestly, I mean, I'm still on the Nexus 5 for 2 years now. Right? I mean, like, it's lasting more than 14 months. I think condemning all Android hardware is not the answer here, unfortunately. But also, him.
Yes.
Yeah. Him having some.
Sorry, audio listeners. We're watching a clip from.
We're watching the clip of Sideshow Bob walking on rakes.
Going, oh.
I mean, somehow Bart was never able to, like, actually kill him.
He's just had some extremely bad luck, it seems like.
I agree.
Zima with the Android OEMs need to up their game, and I mean, I definitely agree. A lot of Android OEMs just build the cheapest possible devices and
yeah, okay, but we're not talking about Moto G's here. We're talking about like flagship devices.
But even then they load it down with crapware and all this other stuff from carriers, and it's not. They often don't aim to make the best possible experience. They aim to do things like make a profit and try to lock customers in with various things. And it doesn't. There's a conflict of interest there with OEMs a lot of times that you kind of don't get on an iPhone. You also don't get it on a Nexus device. But I mean, it's tough. Some of these Android phones are kind of tough. I don't know. What is his history? A Droid 2, a Galaxy. Nah, he's bought some Nexus devices.
Yeah,
they should
Nexus
be
5.
Okay.
Nexus 5 is on the list.
5. LG G4. Yeah. I mean, I my Nexus 5 didn't get killed by the Lollipop update. I mean, like, I don't know. It's just, by the way, we didn't mention, this is Felix. I don't know, Jason, if you mentioned his name, I want to give Felix a shout out. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for listening to iFanboy. Thank you for listening.
And if you have to go to iPhone, it's fine. We'll still be here. You can still watch us. But I would seriously urge you to reconsider.
Yeah, get a. I don't know.
How?
I guess that's the next question: is how do you convince someone who's had such a spotty history with hardware that the next device is not
going
to experience?
Go to the woods, completely remove yourself from this because this is all a lie.
Yeah,
he needs to write back in 14 months and let us know how his iPhone's doing.
I agree. Felix, write back, but keep watching.
Also, I think it might be good if Felix and his wife move off of the Indian burial ground that they built their house on top of.
I agree, because
there's
something going on.
Yeah, so.
Well, this next email is actually mostly addressed to me, as I noticed. So,
Well, I mean, yeah, but by extension, everyone.
Because yeah, well, by extension, everybody. But it is
oh, yeah.
more of a mm-hmm. a tip than a question. So here we go. AAA crew! ! What's up, friends? Hey, quick tip on Spotify. I heard on a recent episode Flo talking about how the music discovery wasn't very good because the stations don't tailor to her very well, or the selection wasn't good. Something to that effect. Well, how's the saying go? You're holding it wrong. Seriously, don't use the radio for discovery. A better recent addition to Spotify is the Discover Weekly section. It's under browse/discover/discover weekly, and it's pretty awesome. And but the slash is, by the way, was the directory.
That handy URL.
That's not hard to find at all. It's browse, discover, then discover weekly.
In a nutshell, its algorithm looks at songs you're playing and liking, and then looks at the 2 billion or so other user playlists among, and... I lost my place. Every week it delivers you a fresh new mixtape of 30 tracks or so. I was skeptical at first, as music discovery is usually pretty weak, but the first playlist I got was good. This is, by the way, from JB325, and I totally agree. I've actually been using some of the Discover playlists, and I have like a shuffling playlist to listen to when I'm walking from Bardo, whatever, and I've been really enjoying like the selection lately. So thank you for pointing that out, but I'm glad we agree that radio is still kind of
I like Spotify. I'm flirting with signing back up with it.
Spotify is great. It absolutely is, and like, don't let the radio get you down. You know,
I don't.
I don't know why I'm anti Spotify, but I never liked the UI. Like,
were you an RDO? You were an RDO guy, right?
I was an RDO guy.
Yeah, that's why.
I was hardcore. My own MP3s in iTunes, and then I switched to RDO, and then I switched to Google Music, and I flirted with Spotify, but it just never. We just don't click. You know, like So
I know. Oh, well. I really liked it in my two months playing with it. I really enjoyed it. And now, the subscription has run out and I haven't had it for a little while. And I found I was listening to new, good, and different stuff. You know what I mean? And with Google Music, like, when I try to do that, I'm often going back to it like, no. But with Spotify, I was able to find some really good kind of, like, dynamic playlists. And
I feel the same way about The Economist. Because I love their mobile apps. No, I swear. I love their mobile apps. They're great. And I love the publication, but I
the
can't.
Of new bands is awful.
Whatever. It's $20 a month. And so I'm just like, I love it, but I can't, you know.
Maybe you shouldn't be looking for new music on The Economist. just a wild idea, maybe.
Listen.
I do.
They always tell me when Paul Simon has something new that I should be listening to.
The Economist does?
Yes. Assuming that's like what a genre I think The Economist would.
Yes.
Suggest. Okay, so Paul Simon and some like Aruban chant, like beach music.
They would,
you know,
do that.
It's good for reading too. Thank you for the tip, JB.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, Ron, you're up.
We got another email from man, this is not fair. Watching All About Android this week brought a question to mind. What would we think if Wacom would write a Huawei watch app? Would we welcome with arms wide and wallets open? We won't have to wonder or wish because Wacom won't write what I wrote here. I just want to hear Juan Richards weed my email wise. So there you go, Wendy Kite. Thank you for giving me lots of W words today.
Today's very giggly.
And Huawei would work. And they would not.
Oh, that was perfect.
That hurt my mouth.
That would be difficult to get through, but I'm happy that you were the one to do it, Ron.
Thumbs up.
Would we praise wide and while it's open? That's the sentence that got me. That's right.
Thank you, Wandy Kite. If that is,
and Huawei, please never do anything with Wacom because we won't
come
appreciate
we won't,
that.
Yeah. We won't like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark H. writes in to say, hi, I'm Mark from Topeka, Kansas. I'm a Google Voice user, so I... What? Oh, thank you. Oh, I had no idea that Mark was a dog.
He sent in a photo.
Thank you, Mark. I missed that photo.
Why is he using such an old laptop?
That's a good question.
He has a mouse with the rolly ball in it.
Might be part of the problem. I'm not sure. He says, I'm a Google Voice user, so I use Hangouts for texting. But it looks like Google is pushing people towards Messenger. A lot of sites are saying that Google will be taking texting out of Hangouts. What are the options for a Google Voice user if Hangouts stops working for SMS? Thanks. Love the show. So it really does. I mean, they keep pushing out these new updates to Messenger. And very recently, they pushed out an update to Hangouts that basically says, if you really like SMS, you should check out our other app.
Which Messenger. Is why I don't use Hangouts or Messenger for that. Because I use Textra. Because
you don't want to be at the whim of Google in this regard?
Yeah, it's just annoying. But
it's not just that. We've heard rumors that say SMS is going to leave Hangouts.
Yeah. Over-the-top messaging is going to become the new...
And Google Voice is the one thing that they wouldn't have a solution for if they did get rid of SMS in Hangouts. They'd have to come up with something. I mean, it used to be the Google Voice app would just kind of make it work. So maybe you could go back to that.
I used the Google Voice app.
I
mean, they could update it.
That's what they need to do is update it.
It's kind of hilarious. I was looking at like the apps that Google has in the store just the other night for no reason. And Google Voice next to everything else, like the icon is so
Oh yeah.
The design of the app is so like
ice cream sandwich.
Three seasons ago.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean I don't know the answer here as far as like Google Voice compatibility outside of this. I was thinking about that too.
That's a head scratcher.
Yeah.
No, there are no options. I think Google would have to figure that out before they actually get rid of SMS. That's the missing piece of it.
Yeah. I mean, it really makes you wonder, like, what Google's plans, long-term plans are for voice. Unless they what? I missed that.
Unless they just kill Google Voice.
That's what I mean. Like, what are their long-term plans? They certainly aren't, like, showing Google Voice a lot of attention or even respect for that matter, you know?
Project Fi seems like the new kind of version of Google Voice where you have to buy, you know, you have to buy cell phone service from Google, but it's just... back-end technology. Google Voice has been just chugging along with no love at all from Google.
I still use it, though. I still use it to send text messages when I'm overseas. That's how I keep in touch with my family at home.
It's my primary
number. The back-end
number.
Works great. It's just all the clients suck.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wah, wah, wah.
So there you go. And in related news, Google Hangouts is now using peer-to-peer connections to make your calls a little better, or so they say. I got that notification over the weekend, and stupid me, I didn't think twice about it. I was like, oh, okay. Meanwhile, it hadn't been reported anywhere. Like, I probably could have tweeted that screenshot and got a lot of love on it. But
because everybody's too pissed with Google Hangouts being so slow, and they're just just ignoring it.
There is that rumor about Google doing a new instant messaging client, a third attempt at this IM stuff. So maybe that would fix your Google
More
Voice.
More IM!
Problem.
I mean, they are just striking out. I mean, that's the thing between Messenger and Hangouts and Voice and all this sort of stuff. You know, they're getting their butts kicked by WhatsApp. They're getting their butts kicked by Facebook Messenger. You know, like there are all these.
Those are companies with $1 billion valuations, and Google just totally misses the whole IM
thing. I use Snapchat now with my friends. By the way, oh my god, who turned into those people? But now we use Snapchat.
Biting my tongue.
it's just us, those of us, you know, we just want to stay hip and cool while we
I'm not saying it. Oh, you're saying it. I'm not saying it. Just earlier today, I was at lunch and someone's like, do you use Snapchat? I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing on that app. I have it. I don't know what it is.
Ron, I wish you would use Snapchat. I would.
All right.
Let's bug you all the time.
I know. Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, please.
2 a.m. Hey, Ron, are you awake? This is a Snapchat. Anyway.
Speaking of apps like Snapchat, what about other apps in apps section? Brian, Sorry, Brian.
I wasn't sure if that was a toss.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I think I'm thrown off at this point. A little discombobulated myself. So podcasts, it's a thing.
It is a thing. Does anybody have podcasts out there?
Yeah, what's a podcast?
In Google Play Music Land? Have you guys seeing any podcasts pop up? Because I haven't seen anything. I'm still using my Podkicker Pro. But apparently, podcasts are live for some people.
Nope.
Some lucky few individuals. You should show yourselves, please, so we can pummel you for having something before us.
Yeah.
It's unfair. Meh.
Yeah. What's so funny is like one of my friends sent me an article about podcasts going. I'm like, yeah, isn't this old news? Like, haven't we known this is coming for months?
Yeah, yes. And it's like, just like, am I going to use it?
That's the real discussion. I mean, because we had a little email conversation about this topic before the show, of which my response was, why do they even bother? Pocket Casts wins. Like, that's the app. Like, that's the default Android podcast app.
But I'm not into it, man.
Wow.
You're Podkicker Pro, right?
Podkicker Pro. I just like it simple. Keep it simple, stupid. Not you. I just mean
no. I get it. It's a term. KSS. It's a colloquialism. I get it.
It's a thing people say. Yeah. I don't know. I still want to.
But
see
anyway,
it,
yes, there are some people out there that have Google Play Music podcasts. Somehow, this was a while ago. It was like a couple days ago, mm-hmm. and we're all thinking, oh, they got an early rollout. This is definitely going to launch. It's going to happen, and then nothing happened.
Nothing.
So. I don't know if these people that had it still have it, but we have screenshots. We can see what it looks like. It's only in the Android app, though. Nobody actually got access to the web component, as far as I know. But yeah, you can see there's a bunch of a bunch of pictures. It says podcasts. It seems to work. So
is it downloading each episode or is it streaming?
Either one. It works just like Google Music does today, where it will stream by default, or you could pin episodes, or you could have it auto-download episodes. But it's very kind of basic. There's no way to speed up playback, or the jump buttons are really weird. There's like jump forward 30 seconds and backwards 30 seconds, and usually it's backwards like 10 seconds or something. And then it's
I ain't using that. I'm sticking with Podkicker Pro.
Yeah, your
convince me, Google.
Still better than this. I mean, this will have a website if that does it for you.
Yeah, and hopefully some sort of syncing of like the point in a particular podcast that you're in. If it's
But podcast apps do that too.
I know.
You know what's really messed up is I use iTunes. I search for the podcast in iTunes. I copy the link and then I paste that into Podkicker Pro. I don't even use. I do this for my Android phone. Wow. Sort of, you know, that was the process that I've just adopted.
And you've just gotten used to it.
Yeah, like using iTunes to find the podcast subscription link.
Use Pocket Cast, they have a whole database and you just type in what you want. Yeah.
I just don't like the UI.
Just try Pocket Cast. Just try Pocket Cast.
Just try Pocket Cast.
All right, I'll try it for a week. And I'll let you all know how I feel, okay? Next week, we'll talk about it, all right?
Sorry,
Pocket Cast has the website as well, too. I can stream on my desktop. It's great.
Is there a website?
Yeah. There is play.pocketcast.com, and you can log into your account, and it syncs all the podcasts that it knows.
Ron, the PocketCast evangelist.
Not only does it know what podcast you subscribe to, but it remembers where you left off listening. So when I get on my
bus. So does Podkicker Pro. It remembers anyway. It's totally fine. You can find streaming or if it's downloaded.
On a website as well as the app?
Well, I don't listen to podcasts at work because I'm busy writing.
That's true. That's a good point.
Look, just have Google acquire them, paint everything orange. Everybody will be happy.
Yeah,
Problem solved.
I don't really like the idea of podcasts being integrated into my music app. Like it's too.
Can you imagine like rocking out and then all of a sudden like you start hearing some dude talking and you're like, no, it just ruined the vibe.
Well, actually, that's really funny you say that, Ron, because if you go back 10 years ago, Jesus Christ, podcasts were completely isolated to RSS feeds and there was arcade players and things like that. Then Apple, of all people, come and add podcast support to iTunes. And for years, that was the default. I listened to podcasts via iTunes on my iPod. You know, so and then now we've only gotten back to dedicated apps that are podcast apps, even on iOS as well. Apple has their own podcast app. There's Overcast and Downcast and all these other ones, and Pocket Cast. So this shift to back to your music, like it's interesting. I don't know where podcasts belong, whether it's with my music or isolated.
Well, I think Google Play Music is already so like weird and bloated, and the amount of clicks it takes from when I open it to get to my collection of personal music is like really crazy to me.
Which is why I am using Spotify.
Yeah, and there's like, I don't know, I feel like I either want to listen to my music or want to listen to, you know, some kind of weird radio thing, and there needs to be easier ways to get to that. Like what they used to do with Google Maps is they would give you multiple icons and you could kind of have an icon that would jump you right to a certain section.
Yeah.
And that would be nice. Mm-hmm. Especially if they're going to build radio and your local music locker and podcast all into this one mega audio app. And yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Well, speaking of audio apps, look at that segue. There might be some other. we might have seen one music service become a trailblazing position for Apple of all companies. As we know, Apple has two Android apps, moved to iOS, as well as Apple Music. And you know, we've been wondering what Apple's planning to do on Android. And during a recent town hall meeting at Apple, their CEO Tim Cook told employees that the Apple Music beta for Android is a way to, quote unquote, test the waters for growing its services division through other platforms.
Is that the sound of applause?
No, that's me sighing heavily.
Oh, that was a sigh.
Okay. Wow. There you go.
Tim Cook's Apple is weird. I don't understand this Apple anymore.
It's just, I don't know. It's too open and like accepting of other platforms.
I know. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, this is Google pressure, though. Google's thing has always been that it is kind of this horizontal company, and if you want to use a Google service, you can use it on Google's operating system or Microsoft's or Apple's on your desktop. And
so can we? That's what Tim Cook's saying. So can we?
Yeah, they're just trying to do that, but it does. I think it does a lot to get you customers because it's like,
trolling.
I want to try this thing. I don't need to go out and buy some kind of device to try it. I just want to use it. And you can just do it with Google, and you can't with Apple. You have to go out and buy a shiny iGadget to use Apple anything.
Which is interesting because that's how Apple makes most of its money. It's through hardware.
It's the
right.
hardware.
So right. It makes me think that like they're like, well, we're going to reach a peak eventually because life and markets, and so we're going to have to find another way to monetize.
Kind of already are. They are reaching
the
peak right now.
Yeah, and so they have to monetize by branching out to other platforms.
Mm-hmm. But listen to what he said, though. He's not talking about hardware or anything like that. He's talking about services division. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. They got to come into Android to try and like sell people music. Like,
right,
here.
But the thing is, it's not just music. If you look at services, it's iCloud, it's iMessage. It's Apple Pay.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I missed that services part.
Yeah, think about all that stuff. So it's the kind of thing where imagine having a dumb iCloud. I'm sorry. Having an iCloud icon on your phone where, because middle, as people in the chat room love to point out, I use a Mac laptop and I'm on a Mac desktop here at home. And it screams at me and barks at me to sign into iCloud and to use iCloud. And I don't because I'm in with Google. But if there was an iCloud app for Android, someone like me could be like, oh, yeah, great. There's a solution. It works with my phone. And honestly, I agree with Ron is that I don't understand Tim Cook's Apple as well because this is so not Steve Jobsian. But when you think about it, they're cutting their nose off despite their face to a larger audience by not providing these services to other platforms.
And they could be somewhat of a Trojan horse for showing people kind of the let's say air quotes level of quality of Apple services, Apple apps, that kind of stuff.
Try iTunes on a Windows computer once. Oh. You are just sold on that Apple experience.
Yeah. I'm actually slowly whittling out Apple from my life and like slowly reintegrating the PC back.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of going over to Microsoft because I don't like iCloud.
I feel like the old Apple strategy would have been let's try to make hardware at maybe lower price points so that more people could buy our hardware and then more people could use our services rather than just say, let's make our services available on the
so that people will want to spend more money. Yeah.
I mean, the Tim Cook Apple is just weird and scary and I don't understand.
Well, I mean,
but I don't fear it. I can't use any Apple services because I'm on a Mac laptop right now. I have an Android phone. That's a Windows computer. If it doesn't work on all that stuff, I can't use it. And because I use all this Google stuff, it doesn't matter that I use three different operating systems every day because it all just works.
Someday it's all going to just blend into one big thing and we're all just going to be owned by all these services.
That's called socialism there, Flo. But not to get
another
political.
Utopian ideal, speaking of exactly. which.
But I mean, Tim Cook's Apple is unlike Steve Jobs, is focused on shareholder value. And this is a way to expand. And if you think about it, I mean, I use Google Drive, but I have a Dropbox account. You know, like there are multiple services that are out there. And I mean, if I was an Apple shareholder, I would want as many of the products in as many users' hands, monetizing as much as you can to maximize my shares. And so
What is the monetization for Apple?
You get people to subscribe to iCloud. You get people to use Apple Pay to get the fees from that. You know, like it's... You know, and then it's a way to pull them in over to the hardware side, potentially as a loss leader, but as an attraction point. You know, like, I mean, so
you get it. There's a free iCloud tier, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's 5 gigs.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, if they do iMessage, that you don't pay for that either, because I mean, the way Google works is there's ads on pretty much everything, other than the one or two.
That's a really good point, actually. It's that in the Google world, you sort of. You kind of just live with the fact that ads are a part of the user experience. And in the Apple world, you're paying all this money to sort of like...
Not see that.
To elevate your... Yeah.
So does Apple show more ads now when they do this horizontal strategy? Do they need... I feel like they definitely need a more solid monetization base since that used to be just buy our hardware and then we don't care.
You mean Apple needs more solid monetization?
For this horizontal thing, yeah.
For the services, yeah. So looking at the iCloud's pricing, it's you get 5 gig free, and then you can upgrade 99 cents for 50 gig, $2.99 for 200 gig, or $9.99 for a terabyte. So, put that in perspective with what Google charges, which is what? Nothing.
Well, my friends will be happy to see that my bubble isn't green anymore.
Well, I wonder. I wonder if it would still be green because you are an Android device.
Shame. Yeah. It's always like my best friend will like text me from the plane on Wi-Fi, and then I try to text her back, and like she doesn't get it.
Fun times.
Anyway,
iMessage is coming to your device very soon. All right, hey, let's continue the app train and let's get into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Taking a look at last week's poll, Earthviewer slammed the competition.
Dang.
52%. It is actually pretty great. Pretty awesome app. Second place is Prism. Ron, that was yours, right?
It was, yep.
Good job there. Instaburner, third place at 15%.
That's
mine
was
Quester, which is apparently very difficult to find if you do a search through the Play Store for it.
Yeah, nobody got to try it, so...
Yeah, it's...
That's your excuse.
Meanwhile, it's an ad. It's not like a name that there are a million apps that have that name.
Just remember, after today's show, if you have to find an app, google.com.
There you go. There are ways. Go to google.com and do the Google foo that we told you about. So we've got some new apps to show off. I'll show off mine here to start off, since I am the big loser of the day. Mine is called Mr. Phone. I'm gonna introduce you to Mr. Phone. Mr. Phone.
Let's see.
So Mr. Phone. Okay. So when you first come to Mr. Phone, this is what you see.
That material design. That's nice. I like it already.
You got a little bit of material design in Mr. Phone. Mr. Phone respects material design. So you've got a little search up here and a little area down here. This is basically a way to review and compare different Android devices against each other. So I'll go here. I'll do the Nexus. 5X. I'll go here.
Mr. Phone, you're taking my job away.
Nexus,
I don't like this.
6P. And then I'll go ahead and do that. It'll churn. It gives me the side by side. I can go, you know, it keeps that bar up there so I know what I'm looking at. It gives me the OS, all the little specs and everything side by side. Pulls it from its database.
Look how cute that is. It's so well organized.
Kind of makes it look nice. If you want to change the look, you can. There's different icon sets for these little symbols, basically. So you know, you can customize it a little bit if you want.
Does it exclude the iPhone for religious reasons? Like, do you just get a little frowny face or something?
Well, let's see here. Apple iPhone.
Say,
let's do the original.
What about a Windows phone?
Let's take a look at the original iPhone.
Do the original iPhone. There's no actual difference from year to year anyway. So.
Wow, the troll is heavy today.
I like it when Ron trolls. I know. Troll more often.
Yeah. Officially announced January 2007. Anyway, so you can use that as a search, or you can, let's see here, you can jump to brands. You can navigate by brand, and I mean, you go in here and
Philips.
It's deep. Well, I don't know. I just tapped at random. Yeah. In fact, what does Philips have?
I know. That's why I was.
Oh. Everybody remembers the Philips C8000.
They have regular phones too, like feature phones. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So you can go in here.
Do they have the Motorola StarTAC?
Well, let's see here. M. Where is M in the alphabet? Oh, there we are. So what am I looking for? I'm sure they do.
Wow, the backflip. Oh my gosh.
Let's see here. Star.
Just a phone.
Razors. Yep. I see razors. Oh my gosh.
So StarTAC. There must
Motorola
be.
Motorola Spice Key. What's that?
Spice Key. There it is. The Spice Key.
Wait, was that one of the Facebook phones?
No, I don't think so.
This looks like Froyo or even earlier. No, this is earlier than that. Wow.
Interesting.
This is 2.3. So.
Wow.
Anyways, so there's that. That's the brands.
You can assign
favorites. So if you find one you really like, you hit the star on it, and it's to your favorites list, so you can look and compare. And then over here are new releases, new phones that have hit. Oh, that's not enough. So you hit that, and it gives you a little bit more. And then you've got popular ones that are just popular.
iPhone's there.
Of course. And there you go. Anyways, this is kind of a cool way to research phones.
Go back. What is that on the bottom?
What, this?
Oh, the Sony.
Sony Xperia Z5? Oh, I thought you were talking about the Utopia. This is a smartphone.
I've heard that has Cyanogen mod on it, maybe? Yes, it does.
Yep, CyanogenOS 12.1. Cool. There you go. Anyways.
I was going to say, you could really go down a rabbit hole with this app.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of like
a fun little rabbit hole.
Yeah, kind of a cool little research tool when you realize just how much stuff is in here. All these brands. I mean, there's just, it's the entire catalog.
Aww, BlackBerry.
We'll go into the 70s.
Bless you.
See, I can do this all day, folks. There you go. Wow. It's called Mr. Phone, and it's free. So there you go. You can compare or just get lost. There you go. Mr. Phone. Okay. Ron, you are next. Now, are we going to do you showing this off from where you are?
We are going to do that. I have started streaming my phone.
Okay.
And so, Brian, I put in the link to it.
Where?
So you.
Where is
in the, it? It's in the dock.
Oh, okay. I didn't see it. Oh. What do you know? We're looking at Ron's phone from his house.
There I am. And the app, I can't move that little thing away. So we're going to have to ignore the upper left-hand corner. That seems to be a new update to Screen Meet. The app I'm talking about today is Guides by Lonely Planet. If you are planning any sort of travel, it's funny because usually my type of apps are the I try to find very functional ones, things that solve problems, things that, you know, give me solutions for what I need. A lot of times, from what I've seen in my experience in the arena, content-based apps don't tend to do so well, but I still think they're important because sometimes you forget or sometimes you are not aware of the amount of content and information that's available to you for absolutely free.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lonely Planet is a great source of travel guides. And in this, I like people who are all guessing the link to follow along, which is great. So we've got three people following along on my screen, which is interesting. So Lonely Planet is a great source, similar to like Fodors and things like that, to give you travel guides to locations. And they print books that you can buy in bookstores. But in this app, it's absolutely and 100% totally free.
Wow.
They give you a list of all the available city guides. You know, here we see Amsterdam, Bangkok, Boston, Buenos Aires, Cape Town, Dubai, all these great locations. And when you find a spot that you want to go to, let's say that we want to go to, let me try to find somewhere in Italy because I like Italy. Let's go to Rome. And you can just choose to download it, and it will download all the content that quickly. And wow. Boom, it's on your phone. There's no in-app purchase. Here's a little paragraph and then pay here to unlock it. You don't have to buy another app for the Rome thing or whatever. Instead, I go into the Rome section and I see a map with all these different spots. I can choose things to see, things to eat, places to sleep, places to shop, places to drink, places to play. And then they also have bubbled up highlights of the city. They've organized museums and galleries, whether it's, you know, and all these groups of information are specific to the city. So in Rome, you've got relics, church art, eating with the locals, like all this kind of specific information. So I like to eat, so I'm going to go to eating with the locals, and it gives me a straight list of great restaurants to choose from, with, you know, information about how expensive they are, where they're located. A great review, you know. So, like, if you find yourself sitting on a train with a long commute and daydreaming about your next vacation, Lonely Planet Guides by Lonely Planet might be a great little companion for you. It's got great photography. It really gives you a sense of what you need to see in these cities. And I looked up a couple. Of course, I looked up New York. I looked up San Francisco. I looked up places that I know really well, and they've got great spots. They've got great, whether it's, you know, obvious tourist spots or kind of off the beaten path kind of places to go to. So, yeah. So Lonely Planet, a great source of content. It's all free. Help plan your next vacation. Figure out what you want to do. It's, you know, got material design. You're able to jump between the discover mode, which is that mode where I'm showing you with all the different, you know, the map and the geolocations. You can slide over to need to know, which basically breaks down each city on specifically like just the key things that you need to know about going there. It gives you budget information. It gives you a really great currency calculator, as well as suggestions of how to budget, you know, if you want to spend less than 100 euros while in Italy or something, you know, 100 to 250. You know, like they give you good guidelines and help you organize your trip that way. And then you can, of course, you can bookmark favorites. And so if you I didn't do anything here, but if we go to the Discover section and I see something that I really, really, you know, I really want to eat at that restaurant, Casa Coppel, I'm going to bookmark it. Well, you need to log in order to do that. I didn't do that yet. But you need to bookmark it, and then you're able to go back and revisit it. So, yeah. So, again, great trip planner. Guides by Lonely Planet, free in the Google Play Store.
Nice.
There you go.
Their content is awesome. If you do
really
a lot
good.
Of
and it's free. It's free.
Yeah, it's crazy.
No in-app purchases. So
just a note for video for viewers of the show. The lag was not the Lonely Planet app. Ron was doing basically you were screen sharing with ScreenMeet, which was your app like a few weeks ago, essentially.
Yep.
So anyways, cool that we can even do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. Ron, you go next.
Okay. Ron A. I'm going to read the description here. The first line of the description, cause it's awesome. So my game is Downwell, which is, it's a game on your phone. Downwell is a curious game about a boy venturing down a well in search of untold treasures with only his gun boots to protect him. So you have gun boots. Basically, you've got three buttons there, left, right, and jump. And when you jump, when you're in the air, if you hit jump again, you shoot bullets downward. So it's kind of a vertical scrolling game. And your job is to just get to the bottom of the well. And just like in Mario, you can jump on top of stuff and kill it. Just like that. And you just kind of fly downward and you accelerate really quickly. And it's addictive. It's a roguelike game. So there's power-ups and the levels are randomly generated. And some of the power-ups are super awesome. Look for little caves on the left and right, and maybe you can find a power-up. Yes, that. There you go. Oh,
nice. This does look fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Okay, I guess really I'll uninstall it.
It's really fun and arcadey. It's on computers too. If you can play it with hardware controls, it is a lot nicer. You will get farther. But yeah, basically you have a life bar and you try to not get hit a bunch. And at the end of every level, you get power-ups to pick from. You get random power-ups and you can pick something good. What is good here? All of those power-ups are pretty bad.
Thanks.
But
okay, creates time void window.
Not that one. That one's lame. Try to get that.
Yeah, sure. I'll do this.
But you have a limited number of bullets you can fire. It recharges when you land, so kind of need to be conscious of when you shoot. And you'll learn what all the different enemies do. Some of them you can jump on. The red ones you can't jump on. And it's just super fun. You just do this forever, and it's really quick. Oh, that power up's not good either. But so that's Noppy. You can kind of control the angle the bullets fly out at. But the good ones are like laser beams and triple, and there's all sorts of fun stuff. Those bats are evil. I hate those things. But that's it. You just, you know, if you're bored, you can start it real easy, jump right into the action. You'll eventually just die and have to start over again, but it's random, so it's fun.
Oh, oops, I guess I purchased. All right, let's go.
And yeah, you collect gems and you can buy stuff at the shops, and it's very well made. It's kind of fun and arcadey, and the touch controls work all right, but if you can get a Bluetooth controller or something like that hooked up, you will do so much better. You'll just like magically go two levels further than you ever have.
Woo! I love it. It's a lot of fun. It's really one of those addictive games that you have a hard time stopping.
Yeah.
Cool. That is Downwell, $3.99, I believe, in the Play Store.
Yeah, there's no in-app purchases after that, so just drop the $4 on it. And
$3. Sorry. $3 even. Cool. All right. Excellent pick. And then, Florence, what is yours?
All right, everybody. So I'm just have a lot of nervousness and anxiety about MWC, as I usually do before every big show. So sleeping has been kind of hard for me. And so to try and not keep me awake more than I have to be, I've been using Dimly, which is a screen dimmer. It brings down the blue on your... sorry, I'm getting text messages from my mother now. Of course I am in the middle of a show.
Is this like the Flux app for OS X?
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me turn it on. Cool, are we doing? Where is it? There it is. Okay. Sorry, we're having technical difficulties here in Flowland.
Do you root for this?
No, so you don't have to root for this. It's really awesome. I have it turned on already, so you can see that it's blue. So this is what it's like when it's off. This is what it's like when it's on, and you can adjust it. It just takes out the blue light filter, and it makes it so when you're using your phone in the dark at night, you can put it to make it even less bright to the point where it's like almost black.
It really goes black pretty fast on our screen, but in actuality, like it's you can still see it.
Yeah. So,
and if you're in a really dark place when you do, you know, dark room when that happens.
I am still kind of on my phone at night, because I'm terrible and I should be not reading emails before bed, but it happens. You can set a timer for it, so it turns on right when you're laying down for bed, or it turns off right when you get up, when, you know, you would reach over and grab your phone. It has motion sensitivity just to like turn it on and off. And it's easy. And it lives in the notification drawer usually. I accidentally dismissed it earlier before the show, so that's why it wasn't there. But I leave it in the notification drawer so I can just like tap it. You know, I don't do the scheduled thing because my schedule's crazy.
How does the default screen brightness adjuster work with that? Does it like mess it up or does it?
No, it doesn't do anything to your screen. It'll just like when you turn it off, it goes back to exactly how the screen was before you put it on. It's just an overlay.
Cool.
Just an overlay.
Neat.
And it is called Dimly.
It's a really, really simple app.
And I think that's free, right?
But I needed something to stop blaring my phone in my face.
Mm-hmm. It helps. I mean, I have one. What is mine?
And I get headaches, too, by the way.
Twilight.
And I use it on the tablet as well, which is really good because I do reading on the tablet. I do magazine reading and e-reading.
I use one similar to this called Twilight. And pretty much every night without fail, for like 10 minutes before I fall asleep, I'm like browsing, you know, the front page of Reddit to see what I've missed. And I notice a huge difference. Like if I don't have it on, like my eyes hurt when I turn the screen off. And if I do...
Well, I like having it on in the morning too, because I check email first thing in the morning to make sure nobody...
No fires.
No fires are happening while I was asleep. And it's good to have, you know, if you don't want to be jarred awake by the blue light.
Yeah. That is Dimly. All right. So go to AAApoll.com/252 to place your vote for your favorite app this week. AAApoll.com/252. Is it Mr. Phone, Guides by Lonely Planet, Dimly, or Downwell? Downwell appears to have an early lead at 45%. It's a lot of fun. And the music's great. Man, it's such a good kind of throwback game.
This is shaping up. The guests are on a roll here.
I know. Could be the year of the guest.
I've never won one of these stupid things.
It's not stupid.
I always lose.
No,
arenas.
I always lose, but I'm still here every Tuesday fighting.
I have a chance. I hope it holds.
If the guests win, that's another week that Ron
doesn't.
That Ron is not winning. So as far as I'm concerned.
Go guest.
Bring it.
Ron Amadio, it's always a pleasure getting you on the show, man. Thank you so much for coming on today and imparting your Android wisdom on everyone.
That's always fun.
Tell people where they can find you if you want to, I don't know, tell people what you're working on.
It is ArsTechnica.com. I am working on some top secret cell phone that I am not allowed to talk about. Going to an event tomorrow, not allowed to talk about that either. Mobile World Congress is coming up soon, though, and I'm not going to Mobile World Congress, but I will be here writing about stuff, and I don't know. I'll find something to do. It'll be fun.
Are you sad you are not going to Mobile World Congress?
It's a toss-up. I mean, it's mostly trying to find something to do while I'm not at Mobile World Congress. I don't know. I'll write about news and stuff.
Yeah.
I'll be on a podcast if you need a podcast, people, while everyone's in Spain.
There we go. Cool. Yeah, man, always a pleasure getting you on. Really appreciate it. And, well, you know, we talk about your stories every week, so you're no stranger. Thanks, Ron. Okay, Ron Richards, the other slice of bread.
Yes, excellent. You can go to about.me/RonXO where you can follow all of my social media stuff, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, all that fun stuff. But I have cool stuff to talk about. Number one, if you go to comicbook.com, you can check out, I chatted with Ryan Reynolds and TJ Miller, who's on Silicon Valley, about the new movie Deadpool, which is coming out this weekend. We were playing pool here in San Francisco for a couple of minutes and got to talk about the new movie. So that was a cool, fun interview I just did. And additionally, this coming Saturday, I'm going to be back up at the Twit Studios and I'm going to be on the screensavers.
Nice.
The new screensavers, whatever you call it. So if you're, you know, loyal Twit viewer, you will see more of me this coming Saturday. So, and then also check out ifanboy.com and goodfellowsminute.com for my other podcasts.
Yeah. Good work. Looking forward to the show this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
What about you, Flo?
I am busy gearing up for MWC. Mm-hmm. You can follow me. So I'm leaving for Barcelona next week. I'll be here next Tuesday. But after that, I'm going to be gone. So be sure to follow me at greenbot.com, pcworld.com, and on Twitter at othatflo. I'm just going to be in Barcelona eating ham and checking out smartphones. And
so jealous.
There's so much good stuff this year, y'all. So please stay tuned.
Go back to the ham.
Yeah.
The jamon.
Yeah. We're gonna need daily jamon reports.
I'm gonna try and sneak some back for you.
I was gonna say you could just wrap it up and bring it.
Maybe. They sell like haunches at the airport. You can just grab one on your way.
It's a good idea. I'll bring Ron some ham.
Jamon.
Slam it on the table like you're a Viking.
And we should just like eat it during a show when I bring a bat, like during the show, and just kind of like pick from it. And, you know?
And also, I think maybe talking about sneaking things across international waters on a podcast that's downloaded by thousands of people isn't a good idea. So maybe we should strike the sneaking.
It's
part.
Fine. It's customs.
Just ham.
It's just ham. It's not like there's bugs in it, like fruit.
It's just ham.
It's not like going to agriculturally affect California's agriculture.
Well, I don't know. It might shame California's ham by going, "You're not as good as me." To California,
I don't think,
ham.
Are we pig people? Are we like? Is California a pig state?
I don't know.
I think we have. We do chickens and cows. I definitely know.
I would like to raise my hand as a pig person. I eat a lot of pork.
I mean, raising pig. Anyway.
Oh no, I don't raise them. I just eat them.
What about you, Brian? Do you raise or eat pigs?
No, I do neither of those things.
Okay, well, there you go.
Unfortunately, it seems like they're pretty popular. But I do do know-how with Padre on Thursdays. You can check that out. And we have a FPV quadcopter, a race quad that we're going to be building side by side and trying to see who can build the better one. And before I go, well, I'd like to say you can follow me on Cranky underscore Hippo on Twitter, but I want Ron to see what he's missing out on Snapchat. See, Ron, you can be doing this all the time.
Snapchat?
I'm not missing out on that at all. Make it stop.
Oh, my gosh, Brian, you are my new favorite person.
See what you can...
Oh, Ron, you got trolled hard.
Yeah, you could be hanging out with me and Flo on Snapchat.
Brian, I am filling out a DM
stage. Bless you, Brian. Bless you
right now.
Oh, that's the best.
Hi, I'm Ron Richards. I like comics.
I do not want anywhere near your Snapchat.
It hurts. It hurts.
No one is safe from the Snapchat.
Oh my gosh. What a giggly show today.
I think if there is one reason to use Snapchat for anyone who is not, it is probably that filter. So
they're so weird. They change them all the time when you just like, yeah.
I'm Jason Howell doing TNT.
Stop. It's so weird. It's so weird seeing yourself like that. Oh, it's just creepy.
It's not cool, man.
Yeah.
Oh. Not cool.
But I love it.
Brian, and Brian, thank you. New favorite person.
No problem.
In this studio.
Oh, it just makes me all weird. You can find me at about.me/Jason Howell, the normal me, not the Snapchatty me. YellowGoldMusic.com for my music. And hey, J.R. Ray Feel does his Android... it's not copying
what's
over.
What's on my home screen?
Yeah, how I use Android.
Yeah, how you use Android.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did me. It was awesome. So Jason, if you want to see kind of what
he called you the
I
Walter
have...
Cronkite of the Android world. Wait, was it Walter Cronkite? No, Wolf Blitzer.
Wolf Blitzer.
No, Walter Cronkite is better. Wolf Blitzer is...
He called me the Wolf Blitzer of Android podcasts. Not sure. I understand where he was going. Wolf, Howell.
There's
a correlation there.
Yeah, I read the whole paragraph.
I thought it was hilarious. Anyways, if you want to know how I organize my home screen, you can, because J.R. Rayfield wrote about it. And maybe one of these days we'll get him back on the show, because it's been far too long. So, you know, just like on the social networks, apply a little pressure to J.R. Let's get him on here. See if we can make it work for his schedule. But that is it for this week. Voicemails 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email at AAA@twit.tv. We are on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We have twitaaa.reddit.com, which is our subreddit of awesomeness. You can find our show notes and past episodes, all the links that we talk about at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, and all the other podcasty places. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting around 5 o'clock. PM Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's it for this week. We will see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everyone.